whole feud with Goodell. We had all the arrests. I mean, we had a man hit people with his car, and that's like not even in the top 10 of things that happened with the Dallas Cowboys season. But let's pump our brakes, because he did it against some of the absolute worst offensive linemen in the history of the NFL.
Just like yesterday, I had to launch a full-on arsenal in the defense of quarterback coach Wade Wilson. So I get what you're saying.
26, 15, 16, 5, 16. That's your rank when it comes to points. Is that mediocre, bro?
By definition, it is.
Okay, he got to go. Next.
You know that once you get in your own head, you become your worst enemy. Those two dropped interceptions, one against the Eagles and one that could have...
Sorry, where did that sneeze come from? All right. You are now rocking with the best. Thank you so much for tuning in to another outstanding, exhilarating, and exciting episode of Catch This Fade. We are back, and thank you so much for being patient with us as we regroup. We know it's been a tough year to try to get through for Cowboys fans. It's okay. I might be underselling that just a little bit. Pat, don't laugh at me, man. That was my man, Pat Walker. Pat, introduce yourself to the people, please.
Hey, what's up, ladies and gentlemen? Shouts out to KD. Thanks for having me on, as always, man. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for sticking with us. It's been a rough year. KD is trying to give you guys a little bit of a window dressing on it to kind of salve the wound, and I can respect that, but let's just call it what it is. It's one of the worst seasons that we've had to deal with in some time, 2015 notwithstanding. But things are looking up. Changes need to be made, so Katie and I are going to chop it up with you guys about it.
And, you know, real talk, I think this was worse than 2015, and for the simple reason of this. There was so much that went on off the football field that had nothing to do with the on-the-field product, that it was just exhausting to be a fan of the Dallas Cowboys. We had the entire ordeal about Zeke. We had the anthem protest. Jerry sticking his nose in there and saying, you know, what he said about what he would do about, you know, his team that wasn't even protesting and kind of lighting that fire. We had the whole feud with Goodell. We had all the arrests. I mean, we had a man hit people with his car, and that's like not even in the top 10 of things that happened with the Dallas Cowboys season. So all in all, it was just exhausting. And I think most people are actually ready to turn the page on the season. You know, there was always hope if they made the playoffs. We think they could have made some noise if they performed up to what they were capable of. But whether or not that was actually a realistic possibility, that it doesn't even matter anymore because they're not going to the playoffs. So it's on to the offseason. And
yes,
that's what we want to talk about right now. We're not going to dive into it too deep, but we do want to cover five areas of the team that need to catch a fade because it has to step up. It has to change for how they're going to proceed in trying to get a championship back to Dallas in the near future.
Let's do it, man, because obviously, I mean, we've all had to live through the last 5 or 6 months, and actually this is one of those seasons wherein it actually lasted more so than 5 or 6 months mentally, because like you said, KD, you had all of the off-the-field issues going on. I mean, and then you have all of the satellite issues, like with Jordan Lewis coming in prior to him being exonerated of his domestic violence allegations, which didn't happen until the month of July. It's just so much that has taken place. Let's just all look forward to the future, but with that being said, what we're about to talk about now, ladies and gentlemen, these things have to change or we will be revisiting these discussions perennially until they do.
And we have to lay the foundation. Obviously, on Tuesday, Jerry Jones went on his regular weekly radio show on 105.3 The Fan, and he basically said he's bringing back Jason Garrett to be the head coach. So although some of us, including myself, I wrote an article the other day about why I think the Cowboys should get rid of Jason Garrett, it's similar to how I felt after 2013. It's drastically different from how I felt in September. That is the roller coaster of what's going on. Check it out on Cowboys Wire, shameless plug. That is the roller coaster of what's going on with the Jason Garrett scenario, but we are going to operate from the point of view that he will return, although we don't necessarily know if his coordinators will, and that's where we're going to start. Myself, personally, for the last three off seasons, I've asked, when is Rod Marinelli going to turn in a good defense? And once again, I'm saying Rod Marinelli must go.
I'm not there with you.
I understand.
Not fully. Not,
I understand.
Not fully. Well, and I'll explain and expound upon it as such. I was one of those that really had his eyebrow raised to his hairline during the absence of Sean Lee. It cannot be overstated how poorly the defense played sans Sean Lee. And it's terrifying to know that you can remove one player. I understand Sean Lee is an alien. We all know this.
Yep.
But he also has injury issues. That is also well known. That being said, the team, which is also kind of a knock to the general manager as well, can't put it all on Marinelli because the pieces have to be placed there for him. But at the end of the day, the coach is responsible for making the adjustments and making the, you know, the needed moves on the field and within the given personnel to make sure that there's not such a precipitous drop off in production like what we saw in the absence of Sean Lee. The team went 1-4 without Sean Lee. That is egregious. That is despicable. So that is indefensible. I'm not here to defend that. What I will offer up as a pseudo counterpoint to those saying Marinelli has absolutely got to go is if you look at the improvement of the defense over the course of the most recent few games, granted, Sean Lee has been back, but if you look at what he's done with particularly his young secondary, you know, rookies like Jordan Lewis, and he didn't have Chidobe Awuzie for much of the season, but when Awuzie came in, immediately began making an impact. You look at, you know, Xavier Woods and his ability to flex. Orlando Scandrick went down with injury. Woods got some snaps at the slot. That's the kind of creativity that Marinelli has been able to bring to the table. Also, you're now starting to see the progression of Taco Charlton, which also becomes or is becoming another feather in his cap when most hi, Katie. We're willing to write off Taco Charlton. So all of those things I kind of offer up as pseudo counterpoint to say, hey, I'm not saying there is not validity to those who think Marinelli may not be the long-term solution. There is validity to that fact, or not to that fact, but to that opinion. But what I would offer is look at what's transpired over the totality of 2017. And I, you know, knowing that and seeing all of that, I can't honestly sit back and say, he has to go. I feel that way about Scott Linehan, which we'll get to. But as far as Marinelli, I think he has at least bought himself 2018.
Okay, here's how I'm going to chop down everything that you just said. Taco Charlton has come on in the last several weeks. Yes, it has been outstanding to see. It gives us hope for the future. But let's pump our brakes because he did it against some of the absolute worst offensive linemen in the history of the NFL. He has come on against the Giants, the Redskins, the Raiders, and the Seahawks. And collectively, they might have one good offensive lineman between all of them at this point in the season. The Washington's offensive line is normally stout, but they are beyond catastrophically injured right now. Oakland's right tackle is missing. Seattle has a Fetty out there, and that was just laughable as you saw what Taco Charlton was able to do to him. So while there's hope that Taco can go ahead and step up, and I hear you type in your notes, be like, damn, KD is right. I know that's what you just typed into your computer. I heard it. But while we give Taco all of these props about where he is right now in the season, let's go ahead and say it's at the end of the year, and yes, there's progression. But let's not assume that he's going to be able to do that against the upper echelon talents in the league. And that is really what we need out of this. And you don't get a chance to rebut this. I'm sorry. We have to
move on. No, hold on. I'm just going to say it this way. I'm going to say it this way. Because I don't want anyone thinking, oh, well, you know, Pat says Taco's going to be a world beater, you know, in 2018. Maybe. I'm simply saying the progression will occur. It has occurred. It will continue to occur. And to your point, you're right. He has not gone up against all pros, to say the least.
Pros.
But if you
if you want to apply
proper perspective, whether this is a good look or a bad look for a veteran such as Tyrone Crawford, for example, Tyrone Crawford has not had a sack since week 8.
Hold up. You know who you're talking to? You're going to compare Tyrone to Tyrone.
Brother, I kind of set you up for that one.
Brother,
you're welcome.
But come on now. you know what I think. He needs to be out of here. We're not even gonna talk about that in our top five things.
All I'm saying, I know I did set you up for that one. All I'm simply saying, I'm saying that to say this: if a veteran is having difficulty with those very same, you know, individuals or those very same players, then you kind of at least got to give more of a nod to Taco and say, well, hey, at least he came in and he not only is he showing progress, but hell, he's doing something that the veterans aren't even doing. That's all I'm saying.
I am very proud of his progress. Yes, there is no doubt about that. So we're going to leave it at that, and I'm going to move on to my other points. Now, the big thing that I think people that say Rod Marinelli deserves another chance is based around how awesome this secondary is. And we know what he was saddled with. Mo Claiborne and Brandon Carr were acquired before Marinelli took over. They basically invested very highly, Carr with the contract, Claiborne with the two draft picks, first or second round, in order to acquire him. So there was not much that he could do, and also Orlando Scandrick was here. So yes, that is true that he was not able to mold a secondary. He was basically dealt the hand that he had to play with in order to play with that secondary over the entire course of his career in Dallas. However, I'm not going to give him credit for the secondary because 2 years ago, the club named Matt Eberflus as passing game coordinator. So as they went out and grabbed these young cornerbacks and made that transition away from the young guys, it wasn't Marinelli that was in charge of devising the scheme and getting them coached up. They brought in new coaches in the secondary and had a new passing game coordinator, and that's who I'm going to give my credit to when it comes to this this bounty of secondary players that the Cowboys have to look forward to over the next several years. I'm not going to give Marinelli that credit because I've seen what he's done in the other parts of the game. Now, linebacker, that was Matt Eberflus's job too. So we are going to say that he deserves some of the blame for what happens when Sean Lee goes out of the game. But as far as the defensive line, which is Marinelli's specialty, I'll give him credit because he's the one that wanted Tank Lawrence. He's the one that pounded the table and said, get me that quarterback, Hunter. So he gets credit. But the rest of it, I seem to remember there being a lot of talk behind the scenes, and maybe I'm revealing too much, but remember Tank Lawrence and I believe David Urban went as well to go work with Von Miller?
It was Von Miller, this offseason, the Von Miller pass rush camp.
And then the pass rush camp, and now look at what's happening. There's been rumors from people that have left the organization that have not been very complimentary of the teaching of Rod Marinelli. I know all the announcers, when you tune on to Fox and CBS, and they all laud the teaching that Rod Marinelli does, but we've heard a lot of rumblings from people that have left the organization that Marinelli really didn't teach all that much when it came to D-line technique. It was more of a, this is my scheme, this is what you do, and I'm firing you up, and I'm a rah-rah, cuss you out type of coach. But as far as actual teaching, and again, I'm not a coach. I've never played on any kind of significant level, so I don't know whether he is or not. I'm only going off of what I'm hearing from people that have been close to the organization and formerly in the organization through third parties. So let me put that caveat out there. I'm not hearing this directly from anybody, but there's enough scuttlebutt from people that I trust to believe that is the sentiment of many people associated with the organization. So with all of that said, I see no reason to give Marinelli final credit for the improvement of the defense that we've seen so far in 2017. And that improvement has only taken them to being just mediocre. They went from being bad to being mediocre. I don't need mediocre in my life. I don't.
Well, and that's all fair. That's all fair. My only counterpoint to that would be, if it's not that I'm willing to give Marinelli 100% of the credit any more than I'm willing to give him 100% of the demerit. And the same would apply for Jason Garrett versus his coordinators. The same logic applies for Marinelli versus, you know, his positional coaches. Linehan in the same way. It's all pieces to the puzzle. It all matters. It, you know, up goes the team, credit goes all around. Or it should. It doesn't, unfortunately, but it should. And if the team sinks, then everybody gets wet. That's how it should be. So I agree with you in that aspect. And yes, Eberflus, it's absolutely fantastic. Just like you saw me on Twitter, follow me at Voice of the Star, shameless plug. just like yesterday, I had to launch a full-on arsenal in the defense of quarterback coach Wade Wilson. So I get what you're saying when it comes to Eberflus and the other positional coaches on defense. Yes, they help make Marinelli look good, but is that not what they're supposed to do? So he's constructing his defense in a way that, although some like KD feels they're still only mediocre, and you were speaking of the secondary, right? Not the defensive line when you made that mediocre statement.
No, I mean the defense in general. I'm looking at them.
Oh, the defense. Okay. You're not talking about the minutia. All right. So, I don't necessarily agree with that either, because I think they're better than average. I mean, if you look at the numbers they're putting up, if you look at the fact they got, you know, the NFL sack leader in Tank Lawrence, and yes, it helped that, you know, they went to Von Miller's rushing camp. I mean, they're supposed to want to get better. That's on them. That great. You know, I'm glad you did that. High five, but I'm not going to give you two high fives. You should want to be the best at what you do. That's what you get paid to do. You're a professional. But I'm not going to take away from Marinelli simply because I want to praise someone like Eberflus. I think that, you know, as one goes, the other goes. And unfortunately, that's kind of how it works, or how it should work. But that's not how it always works. So you make valid points. But at the end of the day, I don't think that we should demerit one to give credit to the other. If the defense is doing well, all of them should be in the room getting the credit. If the defense is not doing well, as we've seen in the absence of Sean Lee, what is it, five times this season, everybody should get their ass handed to them. It just, over the past few weeks, granted Lee is back, but over the past few weeks, if you look at, like I said, the progression of Taku, if you look at over the course of the season, the improvement in the secondary, when they finally, and this goes to kind of your point, this is what infuriated me from a fan standpoint, is the lack of adjustments, i.e. allowing someone like Anthony Brown to remain a starter much longer than he should have. So things like that lend to your point, and I'm fully willing to concede to that. But once those changes were made, you pretty much handed your secondary over to a bunch of, you know, rookies, and they're doing work. Now, obviously, that goes to their skill set as well, but it all has to be orchestrated a certain way. So that goes to Marinelli and his staff. I don't think moving Marinelli out, and some would say, well, you know, move Marinelli out and then promote Eberflus. Okay, that could work long term, but then what if Marinelli is the spoon that stirs the coffee?
Then you fire Eberflus and you move on. See, that's my whole take. No, that's my whole take, because you need to have the ability, you have to have the mentality that being mediocre isn't good enough and you need to take risk in order to improve. Now, let me ask you this question. There are 32 teams in the NFL, correct?
That, of course.
If you finish in the last 5 years, and I'm counting the year with Monty Kiffin, because that was basically Rod Marinelli's defense, but it was, you know, 26, 15, 16, 5, 16. That's your rank when it comes to points. Is that mediocre, bro?
By definition, it is.
Okay, he got to go. Next topic. He's got to go. So one of the things that you hinted at was Scandrick and Brown in the secondary. I know that you kind of wanted to touch on their experience this year and what we should do with them moving forward. So let's briefly talk about that before we switch to some other topics of the team.
Well, I feel like the writing's on the wall for Orlando Scandrick. This was a year that he just absolutely had to have as far as proving himself and proving his worth to the team. Still has not done it. He's not been the same since signing that extension, which, of course, a lot of it goes to injury, his inability to remain healthy. And then, of course, this season, when he was healthy, he delivered some impact games, you know, read Washington Redskins game, obviously, and he's made some impact plays. But more often than not, he's not done much of anything. He only has 3 pass breakups on the year. He has no interceptions, no forced fumbles. And he's right now, unless he plays in week 17, which I highly doubt, against the Eagles, he's going to tally less than 40 tackles, which is his third lowest of his career. So I think the writing's on the wall for Scandrick, especially when you look at what's going on with Jordan Lewis and Chidobe Awuzie now healthy. No setbacks there. And you look at the ability of Xavier Woods to be able to flex from safety, drop down into the as a nickelback as well. I think Scandrick, he has, correct me if I'm wrong, 2 more years, 2018 and 2019, on his contract remaining. I think he's going to be dangled out there as trade bait. They kind of put it out there not so secretively.
Right.
This past spring, it got out there. It didn't end well as far as the PR or the relationship between Scandrick and the team. Finally, supposedly, it was all water under the bridge. To this day, the Cowboys state that that was never, you know, something that they were looking to do. We all know that's a bunch of, you know,
horseshit, for lack of a better way to put it. but I think that in 2018, this offseason coming up, I think it's got to be, I think it will and it has to be a viable option for the Cowboys, especially considering you have a rookie Marquez White. He's waiting to come up off of the practice squad and show what he can do. And then now that we see the Cowboys know how to draft high-quality cornerbacks and defensive backs, here comes the draft. You can re-up and get another one. Hell, they got Xavier Woods in the sixth round of 2017. So it's something that's definitely doable. I think it's time to put Skandrick out there, see what kind of assets you can get for him. Otherwise, you're looking at nearly a $6 million cap hit entering a season wherein you have to give Zach Martin his extension. That is non-negotiable. You're going to probably franchise tag Tank Lawrence. The only other option is to give him his long-term deal. Either way, huge cap hit. So you have things that you need to do to improve the team, and I think Skandrick has to go, and then that kind of segues me to Brown because
Before you go to Brown, I want to just add some insight on Skandrick before you transition to Brown.
Hit me.
Skandrick is scheduled to cost $5.3 million against the cap in 2018. He is signed through 2019. Releasing him or trading him would save the Cowboys roughly $1.4 million. And one of the shocking things that I don't think people realize, this was Orlando Skandrick's 10th year in the league.
Yeah.
Like 10 absolutely. Years, bro. That's a
10
decade.
10 years, dude.
He was drafted in the fifth round of 2008. 10-year career for that guy. Hats off. Salute to him. See you later.
10 years, and in none of those 10 years has he completed a full 16-game regular season stretch.
Yeah, that's not good.
Not a single time. And keep in mind.
Well, no. He's had a couple where he played all 16 games.
You sure?
Yeah, he didn't start all 16 games, but he appeared in 16 games.
Okay.
He hasn't started
he
all 16.
That's right. He didn't start. So
but
let's put that
a lot
out
of that has to do a lot of that has to do with how they were deploying him. Get credit for a start if you're the nickel corner and they come out in base defense, you know, that kind of thing. But
he's had flashes of greatness. I mean, he took the job as a starter for Morris Claiborne. Now, right. If I, you know, at on its face, that doesn't sound like much of an achievement.
Yeah,
but a healthy Morris Claiborne was a force.
And he also outlasted the first round pick from the year that he was drafted in Jenkins.
Yeah.
Was it Jenkins? Was that his name?
I think it was Mike Jenkins.
Yeah, Mike Jenkins. He's so far gone out of my damn memory bank, I forgot the man's name.
I got you.
Mike Jenkins was drafted in the first round along with Felix Jones that year. He outlasted him, and then they drafted Morris Claiborne, and he took Claiborne's job. So suffice to say, Skandrick has done his job for the Dallas Cowboys. It's just that he can no longer do his job at the level that they need him to right now. So it's time to move on. Okay, so let's switch gears. Yeah. Let's go talk about Anthony Brown now.
And Brown was supposed to be, or you know, at least give them some type of value to say, okay, well, in the event things don't work out with Skandrick in 2017 going forward, here we have Anthony Brown. Anthony Brown came on like gangbusters in his rookie season in 2016. A lot of people said, you know, well, he was an afterthought for a lot of people, especially going into the draft and even more so coming out of the draft when you started looking at players like Lewis and Awuzie and Woods. People didn't really talk about Brown much, but he – at that point, deserved the right to be in first team discussions. Cowboys recognized that, put him on the first team, and he starts laying eggs all over the field. So, obvious regression, sophomore slump for Brown. 2018 is going to be a huge prove it season for Anthony Brown. Obviously, 4-year rookie deal. If he wants to remain on the team in 2019, he's got to show out. Otherwise, you're going to see someone like Marquez White take that slot. You're going to see someone like Woods probably doing a 70-30, you know, nickelback to safety ratio to kind of salve the wound of Brown not playing well. And I think, to be honest with you, if Brown drops another season like he did this season, you're not going to see him on this team following 2018. And I would have no qualms with that. This is coming from a guy who in this previous offseason was one of the biggest supporters of Brown. I have receipts, as you well know, that said Brown is, at that point, he was one of the more dangerous cornerbacks on the team. The wheels have fallen off. Now, is that to say that he can't get his mojo back? Absolutely not, because it also goes to scheme, which I'll give you credit for, because I know that deep breath kind of lends to a Marinelli sigh of exasperation. But it also goes to scheme. Brown is... He operates better, as you saw, when they benched him and they started playing him, you know, on a pinch count, so to speak, and put him in the slot as opposed to outside the hashes. He improved
So just keep him there. Get rid of Scandrick. Love you to death, Scandrick. Love all the service that you've done for the Cowboys. But if we're talking about value in 2018 going forward, the value of Scandrick has so diminished that Brown coming off of the bench for nickel duty is now greater. So cut your losses with Scandrick. Also puts Brown in the position to be more successful going forward. Ipso facto, more wins as far as defensively in 2018.
See, here's my thing about Brown. He's played very well the last couple of weeks. He hasn't been able to bring in the interception, and that's been hideously scarring my entire existence watching those passes go through his arms. But he has improved. Now, I do want to bring attention to the fact that Brown played injured this year. He had the ankle injury, and while the secondary was so depleted, I think, and this might be the case with more than a handful of Cowboys, and we'll talk about one in just a very short second as we transition from this, but I think Brown might have been playing injured. He is definitely better playing in the slot than he is on the outside. He's a prototypical dime corner. You don't really want him having to face off against the team's best receiver when they move him into the slot, that sort of situation. So I don't really want him as my nickel back coming in that position, but as a dime back, somebody that, you know, takes the third or fourth passing option, I'm more than comfortable with him taking that role moving forward for the Cowboys through 2018 and beyond. I just have a feeling that combined with playing through injuries and having a role that he wasn't meant for, I think that's what had him looking so bad until the cavalry came. We got Awuzie back. He got shifted over to the dime role, and now I think he's in a comfort zone of what he does best.
And I agree with that. I mean, I can certainly appreciate Brown in the dime, but I also I'm not adverse to him in the nickel. I like him in the nickel. I think he can be effective there as well. But one thing that is – you mentioned that he probably played injured. We don't know that for certain, so we're not going to speculate that as much.
We know he had an ankle injury, and we don't know what happened from there.
Right. I think his injury now is more so egocentric than physical. To be honest with you, we both play sports, and a lot of the listeners have played sports as well. You know that once you get in your own head, you become your worst enemy. Those two dropped interceptions, one against the Eagles and one that could have.
Sorry, where did that sneeze come from?
Savage. And one that could have sealed the game against the Oakland Raiders. Those are catches you got to make, because the season could have very well ended in Oakland if not for Jeff Heath stepping up on two consecutive plays shortly after. But my whole point with Brown is this. I still think he has the ability to be an impact defensive back in this league. I'm not giving up on him whatsoever. I'm simply saying that in 2018, if he doesn't prove it, he's putting himself in a position to be ousted before or at some point during the 2019 season. Now, that could simply be by a trade. It could be an outright release. But I would like to see him remain on the team. I think he has more than what it takes to do what the Cowboys need done. They just have to make sure that they're using him appropriately, putting him in a position to succeed, and then you see him succeed more. And, again, he has to get out of his own head. He has to get out of his own head.
All right. Now, one of the things that we talked about, obviously I did the little jokey sneeze thing with Dak Prescott. I don't even really think there's much point for us to discuss Dak Prescott in this particular venue because of this. We're talking about things that we would like to see the Cowboys do to improve, and they're not getting away from Dak Prescott in 2018. He is their quarterback.
Nope.
Now, his performance in 2018 might lead them to do something differently 2019 and beyond, but he's not going anywhere next year. So any complaints, any thoughts about, well, we need to do this, they're not going to draft a quarterback.
They're moot. They're moved.
It's not going to happen. Cooper Rush isn't going to overtake him.
Nope.
None of that stuff is happening. So there's really not much point in spending time talking about Dak. So we're not going to. We'll move on.
I agree. Because now, we have a long off season, and we'll no doubt double back at some point, and we'll dissect
everything
the regression of Dak Prescott and everything
that
went wrong. Man, there was a lot. But as far as this conversation, it's moot. So let's just breeze right past it.
These Cowboys receivers got to catch this fade, man. And I mean that literally and figuratively. Catch the damn ball.
Boy.
Dez. Bruh.
Bruh.
Look, I have a rule. I don't remember where I saw it, but when I read it, it made sense to me. I'm too old to own the jersey of any player who's younger than me. And I've stuck to that for the last 10 years with one exception. Dez Bryant. Dez Bryant is my favorite football player. He is. I love the passion. I love to see him get excited. I love what he brings to the field when he's fighting through blocks and not blocks, when he's fighting through tackle attempts and just manhandling DBs. Everything about Dez Bryant's game is what I love about football. But Dez either got to restructure this contract or he got to go.
I can't even. I'm right there with you. From putting my fan hat back on really quickly, Dez is. He's not my favorite football player, but he's one of my favorite football players. And not just recently. I mean, like, of all time. He's
of all
my
time.
Favorite football players of all time. So let's be clear on that. Now, fan hat off, Dez. Love you to death, brother. You gotta do something here. Either you got to do something or the Cowboys as an organization have to do something. Now, you saw earlier in the year, it's something that just the chemistry between Dez and Dak has not been there. Dez was, you know, one of the reasons that Dak didn't have nearly as many interceptions as he could have in the first half of the year, which ironically turned into Dez helping add to the interception count here recently. It's crazy. It's been such a schizophrenic year for Dez because he has these drops that are just backbreaking, these turnovers that are absolutely gut-wrenching, and then he makes a huge play that ends up determining the game or deciding the game for the Cowboys. So I don't believe, for those that ask me, and we both get asked a lot, you know, hey, Pat, hey, KD, do you think Dez has lost a step? Nope. I believe there is a myriad of factors that are contributing to his lowered production, that being the lack of chemistry between himself and Dak Prescott, that being offensive scheme issues with Scott Linehan not utilizing Dez to the fullest of his potential ability, simply saying, hey, go on this 9 route and, you know, jump over everybody. Not really putting him in a position to succeed. But that being said, when the ball hits your hands, bruh.
Gotta catch it.
So with that, he has, correct me if I'm wrong, in 2018, he's set to have the largest salary cap hit against the Cowboys. And they're either going to have to approach him with a pay cut, and he's going to have to be willing to accept it, or... you know, things, bruh, things.
Yeah, Teron got him by a million. Teron's cap hit is $17.5 million. Dez is $16.5 million. But the way it's structured...
And you can't let that $16.5 million happen looking at the totality of what happened in 2017. And again, right. It's not all accountable to him, but the things that are accountable to him, like holding the ball out like it's a piece of bread in a game that's a must-win...
Can't happen.
You demanding the ball and then that happening exacerbates how bad the fumble was, because now you have optics involved. And so, yeah, it's going to be a very interesting offseason as far as seeing how they approach and if they approach Dez Bryant at all for a potential pay cut. But you and I agree on this fact. It has to happen. You can't let that salary cap fly with a player that's not been able to give this kind of the production that you're hoping he can. And that's coming off of an injury written, you know, 2016 or past couple of years, I should say, because 2014 as well. So I don't know. If you look at the past two or three seasons, is Dez still elite? Absolutely. Is he still top five? Well, in order to be top five, you got to give me top five numbers or at least be a top five distraction on the field. Neither of those things have been true here recently. So.
The year before Dez Bryant got paid, he had three consecutive seasons with 88 catches or more, 92, 93, and 88. He had three consecutive seasons of 12 touchdowns or more, 12, 13, and 16. Here's what he's done in the three seasons since. He had, so far this year, we're only going through 15 games, but it is what it is. In the 37 games that he's played over the last two seasons, and that's 37 out of a possible 47, about to be 48, he has just 147 receptions, just 2,012 yards, and only 17 touchdowns. That's basically what you would have expected his progression to be based on what he did before he signed the contract. The what? Cowboys have not gotten their money's worth out of the contract. So if you want to sit here and say, okay, well, they paid him based off of, you know, as a reward for what he did previously, which I'll accept that, even though you pay for what you get moving forward. even with that little asterisk saying, yeah, well, he was underpaid for the last 3 years, he has not lived up to this new contract. And now it's to the point with 3 years of evidence of not living up to the contract, whether it be because of injury or lack of quarterback talent, lack of chemistry, whatever the case you may be, he is not making the quarterbacks better. And that's what you need a wide receiver one to do. They have to make a quarterback better when you're paying them $16.5 million a year. So what I propose, first thing I do is you pull a DeMarcus Ware. Dez, are you going to take a pay cut? If you don't take a pay cut, we got to move on. Are you going to do it or are you not? If he says yes, cool. You go out, you draft a wide receiver number one, like Calvin Ridley, maybe James Washington out of Oklahoma State. You do something that can bring a number one receiver skill set.
You better do it anyway.
Different. I was about to get there. That's still different than what Dez brings to the table. Get me the burner who can also be wide receiver number one. Now, if Dez doesn't want to take the pay cut, if he's too prideful, and I'm not, you know, I'm always an advocate for the players when it's player versus the franchise. If he's too prideful, he doesn't want to see that money go away and accept to be paid less based on his stature with the team, I get it. But you say goodbye. And the target, I'm not going to go through all of the wide receiver targets in free agency, but the one guy that I would love for them to make a run at would be Allen Robinson of the Jags. Get him on a one-year prove-it deal. He, you know, he missed a whole year because of his injury, and you're not 100% sure what he's going to come back to. But to me, he was Dez Bryant Jr. coming out of Penn State. I would love to get him to fill in the void for what Dez Bryant would be leaving behind, and also go out and get a Calvin Ridley, and you've completely remade the wide receiver course, and Dak Prescott can prosper. We hope.
We hope. And that's, you know, that last statement. That's not to say that Dak Prescott is not the guy. We're not saying that. And again, we'll get into that later in the offseason. We're simply saying that as it stands, there's still question marks. And that's fair. It's valid. If you're trying to ignore those question marks, you're being disingenuous. Cut the shit. Now, as far as Dez is concerned, we're talking about a player, like you said, he had 41 touchdowns over between 2012 and 2014. And he has, what, 17 since? No, that's not justifying the mammoth contract that he's operating under. And like you said, or like I know you want to say, because I've seen you say it before, and I'm with you on this. Once the contract is signed, the contract is signed, right? Yep. So he doesn't have to accept the pay cut. And if he doesn't, you know, much to the chagrin of many, you know, just kind of have to swallow that because it's a deal that was made and a deal that needs to be honored. That being said, Cowboys do have the out. They can release him, take the cap hit on the dead money, and make the moves like KD suggested, which would be to revamp this wide receiver unit. Because as it stands, they're going to have to do one of two things, or one of three things, or one of four things. There's a lot of different things they can do, but they need to do more than one. One of which is they got to figure out the Dez Bryant situation. Once you figure out the Dez Bryant situation, then the question moves over to Terrence Williams. You just re-upped Terrence Williams on 4 years. Right. But now the question becomes, and we, you know, love you to death, Terrence, and I can appreciate, and certainly as a man, I can respect loyalty. He took less money to stay with the Cowboys.
He loves the Cowboys. He loves being a Cowboy.
So credit to that. And when I say credit to that, I mean standing ovation. That is something that's rarely seen in professional sports, period, let alone the NFL. So definitely there. People ask me, well, Pat, you know, do you think Cowboys are going to move on from Terrence Williams? My answer, no, they're not. So all of these questions floating around, well, would you make a trade for Williams and get a draft pick? Well, yeah, Williams isn't going anywhere. Get that out of your head right now. The bigger question is Dez. Now, does that mean that Williams is going to remain the second option, particularly after a possible revamp of the wide receiver unit? That, I would say no. I think that's a very fluent situation because if you bring in someone, whether it be, you know, in via free agency on an approved deal, like you said, or whether it be in the draft, a speedy wideout that can take the top off of the offense, I think you're going to see a demotion of Terrence Williams. I think that will be the right thing to do, because if you look at Terrence Williams, he is more consistent than people give him credit for, because his drops and his bad decisions are more pronounced than, you know, his consistency. And nobody likes the fact that he was a body catcher, but hey, Terrell Owens was a body catcher. No, I'm not comparing him to Owens. I'm simply saying you can make a living in this league catching with your body. But at the same time, you can blow some games catching with your body, as we've seen with Terrence Williams. So I think that as contractually, Williams is going nowhere, but that
statement in no way, shape, or form is a rubber stamp on him being the number two receiver. Hell, he didn't prove he could be the number one, still hasn't proved that he can be the number two, but he has proven that he can be a reliable number three option. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because they got to get Dak Prescott some weapons. And again, this isn't saying that Dak Prescott, his slump is simply due to the wide receiver unit. Those drops matter. The inability of Linehan to scheme his receivers open matter. But so does the inability to throw a receiver open. But that's a story for
Now. Now, look, you touched on that, and I'm looking at the time. I can't believe we've already been rocking for 40 minutes. So we're going to truncate this podcast. We're going to have to turn it to a part one and a part two. But before we let this go, let's finish off the wide receiver topic, because Cole Beasley is going to enter the last year of his contract in 2018.
Big
and he
deal.
Has had an abysmal season. He's dropped the ball a couple times himself, but more to the point, opposing teams are giving bracket coverage to a 5'4" dude, and the Cowboys can't exploit it.
They can't. They can't figure it out.
How sick is that as an offense that teams are double teaming your slot guy and you can't take advantage?
And triple teaming. I've seen triple teams on some of the coaches' film. And
oh my God.
And still, schematically, more often than not, the Cowboys can't figure out Cole Beasley in 2017. Mind-boggling, dude.
I have some concern that the drafting of Ryan Switzer, the writing was obviously on the wall. The Cowboys were preparing for Cole Beasley to depart. They weren't going to offer him a third contract. He was paid well. I predicted like almost to the dollar what his contract was going to be. So, you know, not a shameless plug.
Yeah, I was going to say pat on the back.
Yeah. There was absolutely no shame in that one.
File your nails, bro. File your nails.
But Beasley isn't going to get a third contract with the Cowboys. He's going to go off. He's going to play for New England. He's going to be a 100-catch guy. It is what it is.
Doesn't it? That just fits, doesn't
it? It is what it is. But I think that the selection of Switzer might have gotten in Beasley's head a little. And compound with that, Dak's struggles and his lack of wanting to throw into coverage, he actually lost faith in Beasley's ability to get open. Because Cole Beasley can get open against anybody. I don't care if you're double, triple teaming him. Cole Beasley makes that first cut, he's open when he makes that cut. Because people don't see it coming. The way he breaks down and makes that outward cut, it's so sick. I don't care how many people you put on him. Unless you're pass interferencing him, I just made that up. Unless you're interfering with him.
I was going to catch that. I was going to let you finish your point. But
Cole Beasley is open. That's what I'm trying to say. Cole Beasley is always open at some point in his route. So if you can't get the ball to him, that's on your quarterback. And that's honestly on your scheme, on not being able to take advantage of people double-teaming him. Because if you double-team him, you have somebody sitting on top of Dez Bryant. How are you not leaking Ezekiel Elliott out of the backfield for 18 catches a game if people are doing that? You stack Beasley and Dez on the same side, run Ezekiel Elliott to the opposite, and you have pay dirt all day long. But I don't even want to get into that because, like I said, we're already 45 minutes in. And Pat, how does time fly like that? We've only covered two of our five topics.
Because, man, I mean, we're talking good, viable, valid, credible topics. Having fun doing it. This is stuff that the Cowboys fans need to hear. They're not getting these solid takes from a lot of other outlets, and this is what, you know, God put us here to do. So we're just doing the will. We're just doing the will of God. You know.
Can I send a shout out to Dallas Morning News, and I'm actually in my own basement doing this podcast right now? Can I send them that shout out, or is that being too petty? Because I would be Petty Roosevelt all up in this joint.
You can't ask if you can shoot somebody after you've already shot.
All right, well, my bad. I apologize. I feel so bad for Bob Sturm and John Machota. Like, how are y'all even mired in that? But that's another story for another
time. Hey, you know,
if I had a budget, I'd hire them both. But, you know.
Yeah, I mean, all we can do is what we do and make sure that what we do is damn good. And I don't know about you, but I feel like what we do is damn good.
There it is. So let's sign off. So let's talk about We'll plan off air how we're going to do part two and cover the other topics that we didn't get to. I'm glad we didn't tease them at the beginning, because then I'd have felt like we neglected the people. But now they're just going to be all tuned in. They know what it is with Catch This Fade. I'm KD Drummond. You can find me on Twitter at KD Drummond NFL. And of course, that is my co-host, Patrick Walker. No C's allowed.
ever.
At Voice of the Star. Follow him on Twitter, 24/7, Dallas 24/7 Sports. I'm, of course, Cowboys Wire. And you know what it is. You know where to find us. iTunes, your podcasts, online, Twitter, social media, Facebook. Pat got the Facebook Live. We're everywhere that you need us to be.
In your dreams, in your nightmares, at the local Piggly Wiggly using greenbacks like it's 1995.
It ain't nothing.
There we go. Ladies and gentlemen, like KD said, it's been a pleasure. This is part one. Stay tuned for part two, where we get into some other key things, both offensively and defensively, that the Cowboys must focus on if they want to improve in 2018. Other than that, I got nothing else to say for part one except science.
Salute.
Guess who's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? I created a monster, 'cause nobody wants to see Marshall no more. They want Shady, I'm chopped liver.
Well, if you want Shady, this is what I'll give you. A little bit of weed mixed with some hard liquor, some vodka that'll jumpstart my heart quicker than a shock when I get shocked at the hospital by the doctor when I'm not cooperating, when I'm rocking the table while he's operating.
Hey!
You waited too long to stop debating, 'cause I'm back, I'm on the rag and ovulating. I know that you got a job, Miss Cheney, but your husband's heart problem's complicating. So the FCC won't let me be, or let me be me, so let me see. They try to shut me down on MTV, but it feels so empty without me, so... Come on, dip, come on your lips. Fuck that, come on your lips and come on your tits and get ready, 'cause this shit's about to get heavy. I just settled all my lawsuits. Fuck you, Devin!
Now this looks like a job for me, so everybody just follow me, 'cause we need a little controversy, 'cause it feels so empty without me. I said this looks like a job for me, so everybody just follow me, 'cause we need a little controversy, 'cause it feels so empty without me.
Little hellions, kids feeling rebellious, embarrassed, the parents still listen to Elvis. They start feeling like prisoners helpless, 'cause someone comes along on a mission and yells,
bitch!
A visionary, vision is scary, can start a revolution, polluting the airwaves, a rebel. Notice let me revel and bask in the fact that I got everyone kissing my ass, and it's a disaster, such a catastrophe for you to see. So damn much of my ass you ask for me. Well, I'm back, na 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 na. Fix your minutes and I'm tuning in, and I'm gonna enter in front of your skin like a splinter.